Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. We have a rare opportunity now to meet Cardinal Walter Kasper, known informally in some Vatican circles, I'm told, as Pope Francis's theologian, largely for the influence of his book, which we'll discuss, called Mercy, written in German, translated into several languages before, now released in English. The book argues that mercy, not judgment, is at the heart of Catholicism and most world religions. So what does that have to do with Pope Francis's rise to rock star status on the issues of poverty, inequality, and even sexuality? We will try to find out. The book's full title is Mercy, the Essence of the Gospel, the Key to Christian Life. Cardinal Kasper, thank you for coming in. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of all the fundamental virtues, justice, compassion, take your pick, why focus on mercy?
Mercy is a central theme in the Old Testament and especially in Jesus' message, and therefore is central for Christian life and for the gospel, and it's the center of the pontificate of Pope Francis.
Is mercy different from pity?
Yeah, it's very different because mercy is not only compassion, a passive attitude, but mercy is also active, wants to help, wants to change a difference, make a difference, and to change the situation of the poor and of the distressed.
Is mercy different from compassion or different from love?
No, from love, not so much, but it's different from compassion. Compassion is a passive. I'm moved. But in mercy, I'm moved also to do something, to help to the other, as the parables of Jesus tell us.
So does mercy involve a power dynamic? In order to take mercy on someone, you have to have power over them?
No, I have no power. Mercy is humble, wants to help, bows down to the misery. Mercy, in the Latin word, is misericordia. Have a heart, a core for the misery, for those who are in distress.
So do you make a distinction between mercy on an individual level and mercy in the social order?
Oh, yes. Mercy is also important in the social order. I think we need all merciful neighbors in our life, and we are happy to have them. If we have them, and mercy is also important for church life.
Pope Francis is probably making his biggest mark by reemphasizing social justice and economic justice. Is mercy a component of justice in that context?
No, mercy and justice are complementary, I would say. Justice is a minimum I have to do for the other, a minimum of respect and of his duties, his rights. Mercy goes beyond justice. When I help to anybody where I'm not obliged by justice, that's merciful. And I think this makes human life better and more beautiful.
You're emphasizing mercy in action. What's an example of mercy in action?
That's a beautiful parable in Jesus' message of the Good Samaritan. There was one fall under the robbers, and now comes the Samaritans. He is moved in his heart, bows down to the dearth, helps the poor man who is helpless there on the street, and brings him to another to help him and to take care for him. That's mercy.
My guest is Cardinal Walter Kasper, whose book Mercy is now out in English. Has been influential in the thinking of Pope Francis. He's referred to in some circles, as I said, as Pope Francis's theologian. And we can take phone calls for him at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Does anybody want to tell us a story? Is mercy a virtue that you try to express in your own life, in action, as well as in your inner emotional reaction? 212-433-9692. Tell us a story, an instant from your life, instance that relates to Cardinal Kasper's book, or do you think about mercy in a social justice context, or do you want to, as You certainly can ask Cardinal Casper a question about his thinking or about Pope Francis. 212-433-WNYC. And you're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT 88.1 Trenton, WNJO 90.3 Toms River, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJP 88.5 Sussex. We are New York and New Jersey public radio. I see that some people call you Pope Francis's theologian, and he has said specifically that he's been influenced by this book. So with all humility, how much or in what ways do you think you have influenced Pope Francis?
I think your mercy was important also when he was still in Buenos Aires. But 2-3 days before the conclave started, I got the Spanish translation of this book, and I saw him in the conclave and gave him his book, and he saw the title, Misericordia, Spanish. He said, that's the name of our God. Without mercy, we would be lost altogether. So he was very moved during the conclave. He read this book.
What for you has been the importance of Pope Francis as a breath of fresh air? Of course, you know, people in the Catholic hierarchy would tend to say that the church is consistent and gives the same message over a long period of time. But something feels new here. Does it to you with Pope Francis?
Oh, yes. It's the springtime of the church. And after springtime, nature comes again and flourishes. And we are experiencing this springtime in Rome when a pope twice a week fills the whole St. Peter's Square, which is not so small. Then it's something, and he attires pope and also non.
Why? What is it that's new? Can you put it in your words?
It's first of all, the style. His personal lifestyle also. He's very authentic. What he tells people, he lives it himself. And then he has a language direct. People understand him. And he has a lot of experience of life. And therefore, he likes people, and he understands people, and people understand him. That's, I think, a very important thing. And he speaks about things people are concerned about. He met the politicians in Italy, and he blamed them very much. And people were happy because he has spoken out what people are thinking.
Francis in Westchester. You're on WNYC with Cardinal Casper. Hello, Francis.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Okay, thank you.
Let me just go out to a quiet area, just away from the din. Yeah, I called because I was noting that your guest is German, and he talked about the overriding importance of mercy. Udo Schaefer is a judge who's worked in the court system in Germany as an author. He first wrote a very well-received treatise on the Baha'i electoral system. And his book, Imperishable Dominion, makes the point that for a society of laws, you really cannot base a society and government based on the concept of mercy, that it has to be about justice, and that mercy is more relevant to interpersonal relationships. That is, if you injure me, I will forgive you, but justice must be served in that it's the society, sort of the monopoly. That's why the state is supposed to have the monopoly on that type of punishment. And the second point, that's the first point. The second point is that I'm not necessarily against mercy in this situation, but it would be, some people would see it as a little self-serving, given that a lot of the priests involved in the sexual abuse scandal would be in need of mercy as well.
Francis, thank you very much. Two deep points. Would you like to address either or both?
I'm of the opinion that mercy is also important in the social sphere, because mercy is a kind of eye-opener to see new situations of need, of distress, and then to appeal to others to help, Everybody of us needs merciful neighbors, merciful cooperators, and so on. And I think mercy makes a difference also in the social
But field. To his second question about the pre-sexual abuse scandal, I mean, it strikes me a little bit hearing this conversation that being concerned about things in the abstract, like whether mercy is a function of justice, as our caller was arguing, or justice is a function of mercy, as you were saying, it's so abstract. And from either standpoint in that discussion, how did the church get so off track on mercy as to have allowed itself the extent of the sexual abuse scandal that it did?
Well, of course, the church made big errors, and the church confessed also these errors. But mercy is very important in this context, to have mercy with the victims, the offended, and to put the offended, the victims, in the first place and to help them to overcome their traumas and so on. Therefore, mercy is very important for the weak people, not for the offender who is on the side of the stronger one. And I think this is a big shift the church made in the last years.
But what's the corrective then that would prevent something like this from happening again? Because maybe the church acknowledged it, as you say, but it was pretty much after it got caught. So can it mostly be about prayer and meditation and Christian notions of mercy, or maybe it needs to be about the more earthly virtues of accountability and the criminal justice system, as I think the caller was suggesting?
Well, these both things do not exclude each other. They are not in contraposition. But it needs especially a new kind of education of future priests. This is a preventive measure we have to take, and we take it also. And mercy is not in contribution to do justice, but justice is a minimum. Mercy is a maximum we have to do. And therefore, I think the church in the last years did a lot to overcome this crisis, because this pedophilia is not only an inner church reality, it's also outside the church. And I think the church is on a good way to overcome it.
My guest is German Cardinal Walter Kasper, sometimes referred to as Pope Francis's theologian, and largely because of the influential book that he has written, which has now been translated into English, called Mercy, The Essence of the Gospel and the Key to Christian Life. And Asher in Woodmere, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Asher.
Good morning, and this could not have been more appropriate. Since last week, I was on the March of the Living with 11,000 Jews from 40 countries in the world attending. Phenomenal. I'm a survivor of the Holocaust of the Sephardic Jews in Greece. I was born in a cave, but that's another story. But I was frequently asked to address audiences, especially in Majdanek, where there is a dedication to the Greek Jews. And I referred to the German who discovered our hiding place. It's so amazing. Germany, Israel, and America are said to be the centers of Jewish population, and he could have done anything. He knew that he was dealing with a Jewish family, but he reflected on a boy that he left, a baby he left in Hamburg, and then he said, "Rouse, never to bother us again." So because of the act of that one man, along with Professor Goldhagen, there were, of course, willing executioners, but there were also Germans who were compassionate. And because of that, I cannot hate Germany or Germans, and even and boycott German products. Am I going to take the bread from an immigrant who constructed my Mercedes, for example? I'm a docent at the Holocaust Center in Glen Cove, and it is amazing the enormous hope and optimism that I exude because of the act of kind people and
Germans willing to act to save you even in the Nazi era. Asher, thank you for your call.
Yes, I was for 10 years responsible in the Vatican for the Jewish Christian or Jewish Catholic relations, and I got a lot of Jewish friends, and we worked together to overcome all this mess we had with all these crimes we had with the Holocaust. And I think Muslims, they are conscious of all these things. And in the meantime, there's a lot of friendship between Germany and Israel, Germany and the Jews. And I found it very enriching, these relations I personally had with Jewish people. And there's a good understanding in the meantime.
If Germany has come to grips in a meaningful way with the legacy of the Holocaust, what do you think was the key to that coming to grips that other societies that have been involved in other monstrous things can learn from?
Well, first of all, I grew up during the war and the Nazi time. I have some memories of it. I was 12 years old when the war was over. And in the village I grew up, there were no Jews. And so we were not informed. We had not the television every all evening, and the newspapers were full of lies. And so Germany was, the most of the Germans were informed about all the things only after the war. And then the first years after the war, there was also the problem of personal survival. It was a very, very difficult situation where we were hungry, and the father was a prisoner of war, came back and so on. And then in the 50s or in the beginning of the 60s, one became aware of all these problems. And now we related anew to the Jews. And in the meantime, also as Christians, as church, we are learning a lot from the Jews. When I come to Jerusalem to all these Bible studies, Christians and Jewish scholars work together, and I think it's a new relation. We are enriched both by this new relation.
Sergio in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sergio.
Hello, Mr. Lehrer. Hello, Mr. Cardinal, sir. I have a question about America has a long history of the economic history of capitalism, whose laissez-faire nature has been characterized at times as ruthless. What do you think mercy? Do you think mercy is can be reconciled with this our capitalist economic nature?
Cardinal Casper.
Well, I'm not a professional about economy and all these things. I do not like these isms, capitalism, socialism, liberalism, and so on.
But not as pure ideology in the abstract sense, but the economic system under which most countries live. Capitalism, and I think this is one of the central concerns of Pope Francis, correct me if I'm wrong, trying to somehow reconcile, exactly as the caller says, mercy and the free market capitalist society without going back to a failed socialism of the old Poland or the old Soviet Union.
Exactly this I wanted to say. Pope Francis, of course, he saw the consequences of a wrong capitalism in Southern America. He was always in these slums, casas miserias of Buenos Aires, and he saw there is something wrong. Then if millions of people are starving, if millions of children are starving and have no clean water and so on, there's something wrong in our world system, and mercy opens the eyes, and thus, first in the personal relationship, in the personal neighborhood, and then also in the public realm, what can be done to improve our system, because we have a growing abyss between the many rich and the and the majority of poor people.
We had scholar and former nun Karen Armstrong on the show recently talking about her charter of compassion, as she calls it, charter of compassion, that she's trying to get leaders of all religions to sign. Yeah. And her bottom line is that so much of religion comes down to the golden rule, do unto others.
Yes.
And I wonder, is that basically what you're saying?
Yes, the golden rule is the seat of mercy. Of course, we have golden rule in practically all religions, in all cultures, and to do not to do to the other what I do not want to say is done to me. That's the seed, it's the beginning of mercy, and therefore we, about mercy, we can have a good dialogue with other cultures. It's not only a specific Christian thing, and I think if everybody would begin to live according to this golden rule, the world would be very different. And about this problem of mercy and the golden rule, there's going on a lot of interreligious, intercultural dialogues also of the Catholic Church.
Indeed. So where does religion or where does Jesus even come into it? I mean, most atheists who might call in probably would agree with you about ethics, but consider it a matter of common sense that this would be the organizing principle of our ethical lives, and that the question of whether there is a God or not, or whether Jesus was the Son of God or the Messiah, is irrelevant.
I think it's not irrelevant because we all are sinners. We have our shortcomings. And to forgive sins, this can do only God, and he can create a new situation, a new chance we are unable to do. And this also that God himself is merciful, is gives us imparts, gives us courage to be merciful ourselves and so forth. And Jesus himself, he quotes the golden rule in the Sermon on the Mount. And therefore, there is a bridge of dialogue with the non-believers and with the non-Christians and the non-religious people.
We need to think there's a supernatural power out there to give us our courage.
I think it's very helpful, and most of the people have some religions. It's only in our Western societies where we have so many unchurched or non-religious people. Normal people have religion, and religion gives them power for their life.
We have a few minutes left. Before you go, I see that at the request of Pope Francis, you gave introductory remarks at a conference on the family earlier this year, and you've been associated with the issue of whether to offer communion to divorced Catholics who have then gotten remarried. Yeah. Why is it a good time to ask new questions about that topic?
It's not so totally new as it's a question since many decades, but it's it's evident urgent pastoral situation. We have to discuss about it, what we can do, and now we have the coming synod in autumn and next year about family, and we cannot speak about family in an abstract way. We have to face and the challenges of the day, and this is one of the bigger challenges, and there are these people are divorced, live in a new marriage, and we have to help them. We have to reflect what we can do.
Should people who've been divorced but now are remarried be offered communion, in your opinion?
Yeah. It depends. The situations of these remarried, divorced people is very different, and we have to look case by situation. But
some marriages would be worthy of it, and some not.
And not more worthy. It depends from the personal attitude. There are people who do not desire, people who desire communion. People have a Christian life, have not, and so we. I think this is a problem. We look to the concrete situation of people.
And I think that even raising this question suggests many other questions that the Church might need to re-examine, and specifically with respect to mercy, as you describe it. Why is it more merciful or ethical to insist that married couples who are unhappy together remain together till death do they part and not get divorced? Why is it merciful or ethical to condone heterosexual couples who will treat each other with love to marry, but not homosexual couples treating each other with love? With the Pope's emphasis on fighting poverty, why not let married couples with two children start there? Married couples with two children use condoms for birth control. Doesn't the Church have a whole set of these sex-related rules that at this point are only about the rules themselves, that common sense and an independent assessment of merciful or an ethical way would bring you to the opposite conclusion?
Well, this is on a lot of questions on the same point. I cannot answer to all these questions. Let me go back to the situation of divorce. A divorce is not so easy thing. It's not to change the jacket or to change the skirt. It's a dramatic. It's a tragedy normally. And therefore, the church, first of all, has to help people to reconcile, to live together. And this, I think it's for the happiness of people. But there can be divorces necessary. And then it's the message of the merciful God that he gives to everybody a new chance, a new beginning, and the church should do it the same.
If a married couple has three children and they live in poverty, should they not be allowed to use birth control to prevent more conception?
Well, the church is not against birth control at all. This is about the method of birth control. I do not want to enter in this casuistic how they had to do it. It's their personal conscience and their personal responsibility.
Give us, before you go, your thoughts on where you think Pope Francis can take the church and take the world.
Well, Pope Francis was a church for the people and with the people. He wants to listen to the voice of the people, of the wisdom of people, and he has a direct contact to people, a people's church, and especially a church for the poor people. That's one point. And the second point is, for instance, he wants a synodical church. It means he wants to give more space to the local churches and then to the consultation among local churches in synods, a less centralized church he wants. And but it's one of these points. But he wants also ecumenism and interreligious dialogue. It's very important for him.
Cardinal Walter Kasper, he's been referred to in some circles as Pope Francis's theologian for the influence of his book on the new pope, this book which is now released in English, which is what brought Cardinal Kasper to New York and to our studio. It's called Mercy, the Essence of the Gospel and the Key to Christian Life. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your questions.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, satirist Christopher Buckley on topics ranging from the White House Correspondents' Dinner to Moby Dick. Stay with us.